Welcome to the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix. Here's your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to a panel discussion, Virtualization, What Federal Managers Need to Know, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our guests today are Sean Kingsbury, the Chief Information Officer of the Recovery and Accountability Transparency Board, John Strait, the Acting Director of IT Services of the U.S. Postal Service's Office of Inspector General, Brian McGrath, the Chief Information Officer at the Census Bureau, Kurt Colson, Vice President of Microsoft's U.S. Public Sector, and Tom Simmons, Vice President of U.S. Public Sector for Citrix. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining us. Well, let's start with some basics. Virtualization. It's one of those big buzzwords that we hear, you know, when I cover things, I hear it at every conference. You got to virtualize. You got to virtualize. Are you virtualizing? Today we're going to explore what virtualization is. What are some common myths? What are some real truths behind this approach? How's it different from cloud computing? How does it mesh with the move to the cloud? And finally, we'll explore where the government is now when it comes to virtualization and where it's heading in the next 3 to 5 years. So let's jump right in. Virtualization, the buzzword. Cloud computing's a buzzword. Let me jump over and start with Kurt Colson from Microsoft. Kurt, what's the difference?
Well, I think the difference is virtualization allows you to take applications, server workloads, and virtualize them down to a server and create that environment. And cloud computing really then harnesses that capability and allows you to, you know, manage those, have elasticity in your environment, and create a very flexible self-service environment that allows you to utilize to the maximum benefit your hardware capabilities, the software capabilities. And I think virtualization is the first step to be able to do that. And as we move to the cloud, we'll find that, you know, customers will look at virtualization and how they do that and then step up to manage it and then incorporate that into private cloud, public clouds, or the hybrid clouds within their environment.
Let me jump over to Sean from the Recovery Board. When you guys went to the cloud for the recovery.gov, was virtualization part of that goal, or did you go just right to the cloud?
Well, I mean, Kurt really hit it on the head. Virtualization really is an enabler to the five characteristics of cloud services, right? So in essence, our goal was to meet our timelines. Again, I mean, we had extreme timelines. So to do so, instead, we stood up our environment, the test dev environment, up in the cloud first, which in essence, we virtualized the infrastructure. You know what I mean? So they do work hand in hand.
And now, Brian, you guys also had an experience with cloud. When this 2010 census, the decennial census, one of the things you talked about, we talked recently about actually, was the idea of moving the websites to the cloud. Talk about, was there a virtualization piece in there as well?
So part of our strategy around deploying our 2010 website for the decennial census was to ensure that we had the appropriate scalability and security of that infrastructure to meet what was determined to be an unknown demand from the American public. So we looked to a combination of both public and private cloud solutions to help meet that unknown demand, and specifically focusing on the content delivery network from the Akamai company gave us that scalability and redundancy.
Now, but so you jumped right to the cloud, or you took that first step in virtualization? Or again, as Sean kind of said, they're kind of really meshed together.
Sure. So we had a dual approach. Internally, we were heavily virtualizing our environment to achieve what's already been stated here, both the agility and the cost. And by moving to the public cloud, how they chose to provide that service, whether it was a virtualized environment or not, was really part of their business model and beyond our requirements.
Let me jump over here to Tom from Citrix. One of the things that you hear a lot about of virtualization is it's, again, a stepping stone towards cloud, but they're also not the same thing. You don't just go cloud, virtualization and then the cloud. Sometimes you just stay virtualized. I hear that all the time, virtualized desktop. Give me a sense of where you see the differences.
Sure, Jason. I think the biggest difference, cloud, generally what we're looking at is compute capacity on demand. And in cloud offerings, you're looking at infrastructure as a service, storage, processor capacity, and the like, desktop as a service, and then even application as a service. To distinguish that from virtualization, you said it best. Virtualization is a stepping stone to the cloud. As Kurt mentioned, by virtualizing workloads in a data center, decoupling that workload from the underlying physical infrastructure, thereby making it portable. When it's portable, I can move it around within my own private data center infrastructure, as I cloud enable my private infrastructure, I can move those workloads within my private cloud. And then when issues around security and some of the other things that might be preventing a quicker migration to the public cloud, because I have that workload portable, I can move it to wherever I have processing capacity. So public clouds become a very viable option in that regard.
So Tom mentioned the very fun word, security. We're going to get there in a second. But first, I'm going to go to John Strait over from the U.S. Postal Service Office of Inspector General. John, give me a little bit of sense of how you guys are looking at virtualization. How does that play into a strategy around cloud? Because while I know every cabinet-level agency has that move three to the cloud, and you guys are a little different from a typical cabinet-level agency, I know you guys are looking at several different of these upcoming technologies.
That's correct. We're heavily virtualized right now. Roughly 90% of our headquarters servers are virtualized here in the D.C. metro area. All of our field sites are physical servers, but roughly 90% right now are virtualized. We're working with several vendors, to include Microsoft, to see what our cloud options are. We're also looking at the Postal Service itself to see if we can leverage some of their existing data centers to host our virtual servers and move them to their environment.
Was the idea to virtualize all those servers with the idea of moving to the cloud eventually, or did that idea of virtualization come, saying, because of the benefits?
It came from the benefits. We started our virtualization effort in 2004, so it's been a ongoing effort for us. So it's worked out very well.
When someone takes a big jump like that, when they start virtualizing servers, is that the easy place to go first, or are there other areas? Because, again, I hear from several different CIOs, desktops or other areas. Kurt, give me a sense of where a lot of your customers are going.
Well, I think it's a combination, Jason. I think you really have to think about what is it that I'm trying to accomplish within my environment. And sort of, you know, as we step forward, we find our customers piloting various scenarios. Where are our challenges? How is this going to fit into our overall enterprise architecture? What's the portfolio of the solutions? I would say it is about the application and the end state of where what I'm trying to achieve with the application, and then moving forward. And they may find that, well, if my end goal is the data center consolidation, then I'm going to look at server workloads. Well, what are on servers? It's applications. And how am I going to do that? I would say it's a mix. We see that there's a lot of movement on the server side, but we're also seeing a lot of customers with a proliferation of devices in their environment, seeing that, you know, I can virtualize my desktop and I can harness the power of this virtualization capability to allow me to have mobility and use my applications on the device of my choosing. And so that is something that's picking up a lot of momentum.
What should agencies keep in mind? If you're looking at virtualization now, and again, I think so many agencies are, give me some best practices. What should you look at? What are some of the considerations for what can be moved to a virtualized set of services? Sean?
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question.
A loaded question. That's all I give is loaded questions.
Well, I love it, too. Right now, there's opportunity because, I mean, it's almost like you have to step back for a second and say, right now, we're at a great time where we have great risk, great challenges. When you look at we have a deficit or a decrease in funding for IT infrastructures for federal. We have huge strategies from a federal government perspective when you look at data center consolidation, migration efforts, and what have you. So when you begin to look at that and you have a perfect storm now, right now, because now you're actually saying, well, I don't have to, I can make radical change now, no different than Y2K. Y2K wasn't about the ones and O's. It was really about opportunity to get rid of a lot of outdated systems, right? So in essence, this is that opportunity, right? So when you look at it from that perspective and then look forward and say, what's the best approach for me to then make a difference and actually cut costs, because you have to operate with less money, right? And this is that opportunity, but then you have to look at comfort level versus security, right? And you have to think you're going to fall somewhere in there, which means, similar to what Kurt said, you're going to live in multiple environments from a hybrid cloud perspective, where you're going to have private and you're going to have public, and then you're going to have to move between the two, right? But the opportunities here, when you look at things the agencies need to think about, is there is massive opportunity right now to actually gain the efficiencies and leverage the momentum.
John, when you guys were looking at virtualization, when you guys were moving your servers to a virtualized state, was the issue of cost? Was it just to try to decrease your cost? Was it an issue of better service? What was the kind of top of mind from your perspective?
It was all those things. One of our driving factors was space, HVAC, power, those kinds of things. So it was both, really.
Are you finding now that, okay, you've been in this now for almost 7 years, it seems like, which just seems like a long time. Are you finding that those savings are really be able to use for other things now, or are you starting to move, take those savings or that money that maybe was once spent on HVAC or servers and use it for upgraded applications or better services to your customer?
Right. Yes, it definitely makes us more flexible on what we can do with that money. That is a big drain when you're talking about hardware, power, cooling, those kinds of things. It's a big drain on the budget. So, yes, it frees us up to look at other technologies.
Brian?
When we initiated our effort, we were really focused on cost. And we did an asset utilization inventory and determined that we had 100 servers in our environment that were being utilized 0.08% or less. So from a cost perspective, we were able to achieve some significant cost avoidance. But the real outcome, the other benefit that we've seen is really agility in our environment, that we now have the ability both internally, and we thank the pressures from the public cloud for the initiative around our private cloud, that allows us to spin up infrastructure and systems for our customers very rapidly based on a standards approach that really allows us to be competitive internally with the external marketplace.
Tom?
Yeah, just to follow up on what Brian's saying, virtualization in the infrastructure as a service or data center servers has come a long way. It wasn't 6-7 years ago when you would tour a typical data center, whether it was a federal government data center or a private sector data center, where the data center manager would show you, these are my Outlook servers over here that run my email, and these are my servers that are dedicated to file and print services, and this is my SQL servers. And they were physical servers dedicated to a specific task. And to the previous point, when you look at space, footprint, cooling, power, the sprawl of those things was creating a tremendous problem. Add to that the idea that in any given point in time, I'm way over-provisioned. Virtualization in the data center in just 6 years has become a very accepted way of doing things. And what I'll call the server huggers that were out there not too long ago, they no longer can go down there and look at their server that's running their application. It's become a workload that's portable within the infrastructure. And that's one of the big benefits of virtualization.
In fact, you bring up a really interesting point about the data center consolidation. Again, another initiative coming from the Obama administration, something that Brian and John, and John, you all get to deal with every day a little bit. Let me ask you, are you guys jumping into virtualization first? I know, for instance, John said you're already 90% virtualized, so you're already there. Are you virtualizing your virtualized servers already? Are you trying to take it even smaller?
No, I don't think so. I think we're at a good point right now. What we're getting into is virtualizing the applications. We found that really helps us quite a bit. It's kind of platform independent scenario where we don't have to worry about interoperability issues on the desktop. We can manage that all from the server. So that's really where we're starting to expand.
And let me jump over to Brian real quick. At Census, I know when we talked recently, you talked about some of the data center consolidation. Is virtualization a step, or are you jumping over right to the cloud?
Virtualization for us is a key building block for our data center consolidation initiative. As a result of being able to highly virtualize our environment, we're going to be closing one of our data centers 2.5 years early because we have now the footprint within our primary facilities to accommodate all the additional requirements because of virtualization. I would also add that virtualization beyond just the compute side of the house, we're looking at virtualization, as I'm sure all of my colleagues are, on the storage side.
I think storage is the other place. I mean, Kurt, are you seeing customers going down that's the next logical path of storage? Or as Tom was talking about, the idea of you can move to applications to desktop? I mean, it almost seems like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure thin clients are coming back?
Well, it's across the spectrum relative to the things that they're looking at. Relative to devices, I mean, we're in an environment where it's bring your own device. I mean, it's always on. You're using your mobile device, your smart device, your tablet device, your PC. You want to be able to, look at your desktop, look at your applications, do the work that you need to do across those devices, and certainly virtualization is an enabler for that. Certainly storage is a key capability, and factors that customers need to think about when they do virtualize is that, from an efficiency perspective and the things they need to evaluate from their enterprises, they could become an environment where that they virtualize so much, and if they don't think about storage as the mechanism, you actually get too much in cost incurred relative to what it is you're storing. And I think that's one of the factors in the evaluation that our customers are going through, is looking at virtualization all up. That is, it's not just a matter of saying we're going to virtualize this particular server workload or application, but how does it fit within the enterprise, and what are my constraints, what are my factors relative to storage, relative to security, relative to fitting into the management architecture that I need, you know, across my organization.
Kurt gives us a perfect time to take a break because you teed up the next set of questions. You're listening to the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The benefits of virtualization are clear. Use less energy, generate less heat, take up less space. But before making the leap, make sure you're leveraging your existing Microsoft investment. You may already own key virtualization products like Remote Desktop Services, System Center, and Windows Server 2008 R2 with Hyper-V. These products put you well on your way to a well-managed, virtualized application, desktop, and server environment, moving toward the cloud. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Welcome back to the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Our guests today are Sean Kingsbury, the Chief Information Officer of the Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board; John Strait, the Acting Director of IT Services at the U.S. Postal Service's Office of Inspector General; Brian McGrath, the Chief Information Officer of the Census Bureau; Kurt Colson, the Vice President of Microsoft's U.S. Public Sector; and Tom Simmons, Vice President of the U.S. Public Sector for Citrix. Now, last section, we talked a little bit about what is virtualization, how is it the same, how is it different from cloud computing. Let's jump into the myths. There's a lot of ideas out there about what it is, how it works, cost-cutting, security issues. Let me start with Tom. Give me a sense of what are some of the common myths that you hear from either customers or from even inside Citrix.
So I think the myths, the topics that folks are looking to virtualization to resolve across the board are centered around, as we talked a little bit earlier, cost cutting, that it's a panacea, will have the effect of reducing costs across the board. And then the other one that I think is getting a lot of emphasis and play today in the space is security. When I have dedicated resources and I can maintain them within a firewall, and I can build, as DOD and the federal government especially does, build a whole system around an application, I can lock it down, I can secure it. Can I accomplish the same things with virtualization? And then from virtualization, taking those things to the cloud. Some of the aspects of cost-cutting and security have yet to be kind of finalized in this marketplace. But as I said before, virtualization has come a long way in the last 5 years. And the overall ability to reduce cost is pretty obvious. John talked about it before. When you look at reducing the investment in physical infrastructure, I can put more workloads on a single server by virtualizing that server than I could running it just as a physical server. I get some very obvious cost savings there. Beyond that, we talked about the reduction on HVAC, the cost to cool that environment, the cost to power that environment. If I have a smaller footprint, my energy costs are going to go down. So from a cost-cutting perspective, those are the things that we look for. There is an investment in creating a virtualized environment, and I'm sure the folks that have already done it can share with you some of their experience there. I think that's probably the most significant conversation that we have with our government customers today, is that to get to that savings in M&A and the tail, the initial investment has to be made not just to establish the virtual infrastructure, but to make sure it's properly architected, to utilize the experience of others that have done it, whether it's the systems integrator community that builds a virtualization practice, or, you know, the consultants that can come in from the been there, done that agencies that are already ahead of it. You have a real quicker path to that cost savings if you do it the right way up front.
Kurt?
Well, I would just echo what Tom said, Jason, is that, you know, I think there has been this myth that
that virtualization is the silver bullet to my enterprise for a number of factors. And, you know, if you virtualize a poorly managed environment or, you know, an insecure environment, then you got a virtualized insecure environment. And I think, you know, it is an ability to look at how do we incorporate this technology. And I also think, just as we see in every other aspect of technology, virtualization has evolved as well in its capabilities, in its ability to integrate deeply into the operating system, and in its ability, as we discussed early, to be a stepping stone to the cloud. And so thinking through the entire enterprise is an integral part of this virtualization, because we are seeing a point where some customers, they sort of hit this threshold of how much I can virtualize, and they're not necessarily seeing the cost savings, because the cost both of the licenses that they may have for the virtualization technology, there's a cost incurred. The more virtualized machines they have, the higher the cost. Are they achieving the efficiencies of how they manage this environment, and have we stood up this virtualized environment in a way that in and of itself it's its own silo? And so I think those are some of the myths. It's really virtualization, to achieve its benefit, has to be a holistic part of the overall approach to the enterprise.
What I find interesting from what Tom and what Kurt just talked about was so much was the focus on cost cutting and not so much on security. On the other hand, I hear a lot of people worried about security when it comes to cloud specifically, but virtualization secondary. So let me jump over to John. You guys, since you guys are kind of on the edge of the virtualization, leading the pack, how did you deal with the cost-cutting issue? And then let's talk about security afterwards.
Cost-cutting, that is a very good point. You know, there is a large outlay of money in the beginning, potentially depending on your environment, and it could take you years to recoup that cost over time. What we're doing to, you know, we look to virtualize as much as we can. Not everything can be virtualized, though. That's another myth. There are some applications that there's performance considerations or just the sheer requirement for the CPUs and the memory and database and things like that, that you're just unable to do that. So not everything can go. But from cost, we look to virtualize first to minimize, so we don't have to have to purchase that hardware or have that HVAC or have that power.
Let me ask you, when you talk about your servers that are virtualized, what's your usage? Are you like as Brian talked about, he found one that was 0.08% of his servers were utilized. Are you guys in the 70-80% range? Do you have a sense of where you're at?
We're about 60-70% on the clustered front ends that we have for our virtualization right now. Yes.
And that gives you obviously space. So when you want to add, for instance, an application or add storage, or that gives you some room to play with, if you will.
That's correct, yes.
And from a cost-cutting standpoint, let me just follow up with one more. What kind of percentage savings are you seeing? Can you give us a sense of, are you talking about, you know, 10% savings, 80% savings? Do you have any analysis on that?
Probably about 60, 65%. That's about what we're looking at.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. Brian, yeah. Let me jump over to you. Are you guys, as you guys make some decisions about moving to virtualization and closing down data centers, what do you have an expectation of pretty high savings? But at the same time, what's your upfront cost going to be as well?
So we have, we're about to embark on a virtualization first policy, kind of formally at the Census Bureau. And clearly there's going to be savings realized on the hardware that we can better utilize the hardware that we have. But from a cost perspective, we're seeing there's added cost in the security space because there's some degree of uncertainty in a highly virtualized environment. As Tom was pointing out earlier, server huggers, you know, it's somewhat easy to secure an environment when you had one application with one OS running on one physical piece of equipment. Now that you're moving to a much more heterogeneous environment, you know, we're finding that the cost to secure the environment, to conduct the certification, accreditation, continuous monitoring is greater. The other piece is that we're finding we need an additional layer of expertise in our environment from a resource perspective. What does the virtualization stack look like? You now need resources to manage the hypervisor in that environment, which we didn't have before. Also, the dreaded kind of VM sprawl that we've all talked and some of us have experienced, it becomes very easy to spin up systems, but then do you have the tools, the technologies, and the expertise to manage that rapidly growing environment?
Let me jump over to Sean real quick, because you guys didn't have an existing environment. You guys can make a decision and say, because of the Recovery and Accountability and Transparency Board was a new organization. What does that mean for you in terms of the upfront cost to virtualize to move to the cloud, and there aren't really savings for you. So was that kind of a loss leader in the first few years once you got the sites and storage and application set up?
Well, actually, we had a progression, right? Because initially when we stood up the entire infrastructure in Savvis, physical infrastructure, physical hardware, and we're talking everything, right? We're talking the entire network stack, the entire storage stack, and all of the servers that it took to run the entire infrastructure. As we looked at, we got to that optimization phase, we said, well, you know, how can we do this better? We have COOP options, right? So now, how can we, you know, move toward optimizing how we do business and begin to cut cost and increase our performance. And in essence, that's when we went down that path where we actually did the cost-benefit analysis, which included security. Again, we have 13 IGs, right? I mean, so we included security and performance and several other attributes. And out of that, it only made sense to move down this path. And because we had already stood up the entire environment in a test dev Amazon environment, we knew that we could do it. So we quickly did physical to virtual conversions of the existing infrastructure, moved the production environment over to cloud services, and then we knew that we also embedded COOP in it. But I mean, I think the key to this is business drives technology, not the other way around. Sometimes the capabilities that you have in the technology get you to think about other things you can do from a business standpoint. So by having clear business requirements, where you say, this is what we need, this is where we want to go, this is these are our security requirements, this is our uptime, right? Then you that drives a lot of that, so you make the right decisions, right? And then you have something to validate against. Right. So, I mean, so we did. We took those progressive steps forward from physical to virtualizing, but it was based on business requirements that drove the configuration. That's why I say that Amazon outage, right, didn't affect us, because we had requirements from a business standpoint that said, you know, we can't be down. Right. So we architected it in.
One of the things that came up I thought was very interesting is there's all this talk about cloud and virtualization in many ways. And let me throw it over to Kurt real quick. Isn't this just another name for managed services? Isn't this just another name for outsourcing? And if you really, really want to go back, and you guys will probably be able to remember this better than me, but ASPs, remember those? Isn't this all what we're talking about here? Just put a new paint, what's it called, lipstick on the pig?
Maybe you didn't mention time sharing.
So
maybe,
sorry.
Maybe I don't know how far back we want to go. I mean, certainly, you know, the ability to, you know, take advantage of centralized services has been around a long time. And I think we have the ability through virtualization, and what we see is to continue to harness the power of technology in a multitude of different ways and sort of pull this together. And it's sort of the ebb and flow of technology, it's sort of the empowerment and then the ability to use this cloud technology. I think the one big difference as we've evolved is the fact that you have an ability to really utilize, you know, what is the best device for the individual to accomplish their business goals, to harness the server capability, whether it's in-house based on my security requirements or whether I'm using a public cloud capability and it allows me to reduce my cost. And I think one of the key things that Sean mentioned, and it came out from Brian and John as well, is that it's not just about virtualization being the end state, but it is about the business process and what is our business goal. And I think we find that most of the business goals is not just one, but there's a multitude of those. And so you don't stand up virtualization in its own silo, in and of itself, but, you know, it is a greater part of the whole. And I think one of the things we're starting to see, especially with the proliferation of devices, is the need that, you know what, I can't do device management in a silo. I can't do virtualization management in a silo. How do I have a single pane of glass that allows me to harness this capability, understand what's going on in my environment, and then more effectively, you know, have the elasticity that I need using virtualization, using cloud to drive this forward?
You bring up a very interesting point, the fact that we went from myths, now we're into some truths. The truth is virtualization is not the same as managed services, time sharing, ASPs, you name it. So let's talk a little bit about what are some truths. I think let's start with security. Is virtualization safe? Is it safer? Is it as safe as if you hug your server? Give me a sense. Let me start with Brian.
Well, I think it requires a different strategy and approach to security, understanding that the underlying architecture is different we have focused a great deal on security in our environment, and we're finding that once we have a base architecture and we engage the security folks day one in building that architecture, that as long as we're mindful in how we move forward, the environment can be as secure and, frankly, can be more secure than the traditional environment, because you can deploy tools and capabilities to focus specifically on kind of the agile nature of that environment, which, again, allows us to do security on the fly, if you will, as opposed to just a traditional snapshot in time approach to security.
And that's really, we're getting to the kind of the continuous monitoring. Tom?
Yeah, I was just going to add, Brian brings up a good point that today, with the experience that we have over the years, security is now part of the objective of the infrastructure. Architects are building security into the way we're designing things today. From an industry perspective, some of the things that Microsoft's putting in the operating system and the workspace environment in Windows 7, from both the workstation and the server, the things that Citrix is architecting into our solutions, not just to secure the infrastructure, but to manage that security. We're seeing security, instead of a bolt-on after the fact, it becomes an architectural design criteria. And as Brian says, we're getting more secure. And the capabilities, if you conceptualize virtualization as bring it back to the days of timeshare in the mainframe, and I'm having a processing capacity that is centralized, whether, that's centralized in the cloud or that's centralized in my data center, if I look at the cloud as a mainframe processing capacity, I really can take a different view of security, and I can secure things at the core rather than our traditional approach of securing them from the endpoint in.
Let me jump over to John real quick. I'm going to come back to you a couple times because you are our test case here, since 90% of you of your servers are virtualized. How do you deal with that security issue? Is that a huge concern? Or again, it's just like everything else. You got to build it in. You got to understand it. You got to architect it. Give me a sense of how you guys are dealing with security.
You build it in, like you said, like everybody's been saying here. You build it in. When you start from the ground up, that's a consideration. You make sure that you're working with your security folks, and that's a priority going in. And it's through all the phases that you go through to bring a virtual server online is you have that boat embedded in there.
Now, Sean, a lot of your information is public, so security is important, but maybe it's not as important as, say, Census Bureau data, which you don't want to make public if you don't want to. Give me a sense of how you guys have architected in security from your end.
Actually, I consider what we have today as a hybrid cloud, because we also have what we don't talk about much when you look at the Fraud, Waste, and Abuse program, right? I look at that as, again, this is locally hosted cloud with connectors outbound, right? So in essence, it comes back to understanding what you have, right? Because we had to actually say, well, what do we have and what are the security requirements from a business standpoint? Well, I always try and come back to the business side. What are the security requirements from a business standpoint? And then you can align that to tier one through tier four data center requirements, right? This is highly secure. We can't have this information leave the building, as an example, but it's a virtualized environment, right? Which is fundamentally different than recovery.gov data, right, which still has to be secured, because if the information gets out before it's supposed to, we now have problems, right? So we had to make those types of decisions and across the board, and we have to keep revisiting that.
But what's your one factor, because we're going to take a break in a quick sec, give me the one or two things that you guys really have to focus when you had to focus on security. What were you looking at?
The type of data that we have. What are the requirements from this data when you look at the categorization of the systems? And now what's the best place for it to sit when you look at how we secure it?
All right, that was three, but that was excellent. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Virtualization is just the starting point to building a dynamic data center. With decades of experience in business critical applications, Microsoft and Citrix can provide your agency with the most comprehensive, cost-effective VDI experience by integrating management of your physical and virtual desktops. No wonder their customers are doing more by spending less. Learn how to leverage VDI to transform your telework experience and move to the cloud at Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Welcome back to the Virtualization, What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guests today are Sean Kingsbury, the Chief Information Officer of the Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board, John Strait, the Acting Director of IT Services at the U.S. Postal Service's Office of Inspector General, Brian McGrath, the Chief Information Officer at the Census Bureau, Kurt Colson, Vice President of Microsoft's U.S. Public Sector, and Tom Simmons, Vice President of the U.S. Public Sector for Citrix. Now, before break, we talked a lot about the myths, the truths about virtualization. One thing that came out during that conversation was the idea of the virtualization first policy. This is something that the Census Bureau is working on. So let's start with you, Brian. Give me a sense of what that policy says. How's it going to work? And then I'm going to talk a little bit about, are we seeing this from other agencies as well?
So our focus is to, as the panel members have already discussed, is to drive both cost, efficiency, and agility into our environment. And much like the Postal Service, we have something north of 750 servers currently virtualized in both a Windows and Linux environment. And we're realizing the efficiencies and effectiveness. And to put some real structure and discipline around what has been an informal process, we're moving forward with a virtualization-first policy. And basically what the policy says is when we're presented with a requirement for compute resources from a customer, we think virtualization first, and so long as that meets sound business continuity, business requirements, disaster recovery, security requirements, then we will virtualize that as part of one of our two existing farms, Linux or Windows farm. If it doesn't make sense for any one of those reasons, then obviously we don't. Primarily at this area, we're seeing lots of opportunity to virtualize applications, but seeing some real struggles and complexities on the database side. So it's about driving that agility and efficiency into our environment and to ensure that we're providing a competitive service internally as part of a government service provider, as well as, you know, our public counterparts can provide. Because I'm a fee-for-service provider to my own organization, and my costs have to be efficient and effective, or why should they do business with me? So this is part of our strategy to really drive the cost and agility into the environment.
This is something obviously the Census Bureau is doing, but is this, are you guys acting as a test case for maybe the broader Commerce Department?
We're certainly having lots of dialogue with the Commerce CIO to ensure that, you know, we're in alignment with his strategies. Obviously, we think that a virtualization-first strategy is consistent with a cloud-first strategy that the federal CIO has enacted. Some of our counterparts in the defense industry are a little bit ahead of us in this, and we've had some conversations with them to leverage their activities. So I would venture to say that much like the Census Bureau, a lot of the federal space is already doing this, perhaps on an informal basis. We're just trying to put some structure around it.
That's a great segue, because Kurt, what are you guys seeing from your customers? Are you seeing that same kind of concept of let's virtualize first, and if we can't, then we'll figure it out?
Yes. I mean, I would agree with Brian. I mean, it's a part of every conversation with our customers that they're thinking about virtualization. They have a better understanding of, you know, what is the density of the utilization for my servers, for my environment. You know, I think it's an integral element. I mean, it's sort of the non-stated element to the government's data center consolidation efforts, and even the 25-point plan to the cloud really is looking at, you know, how do we drive cost efficiencies and better capabilities to bring the latest functionality to those end users. So it's a critical element of the conversation.
You brought up the data center consolidation. I think that's what you're seeing a lot of discussions. A lot of agencies are saying, okay, can we, if we're going to shut down 10 data centers or 5 data centers, okay, how do we make up for that? Well, let's virtualize within that. Let me ask you, John, since you guys are already virtualized in a big way, are you offering kind of some advice to maybe some other federal agencies about, okay, if you're going to virtualize your servers, your data centers, what are some of the steps you can take?
Yeah, we're doing that. You know, from our perspective, you know, we're limited on space right now. And as I said earlier, we're looking at working with Microsoft, is potentially moving to their cloud-based solution. We're also looking at existing postal data centers to see if we can move to one of their facilities and leverage some of their floor space. But it's something that we definitely are working with other agencies, talking to them about, but nothing formal at this point.
And from Tom, your perspective, when you talk to your customers, is that also the big move to virtualization and then to cloud, or are people really focused on virtualization right now, even though we have that cloud first policy?
I guess the short answer is it depends. The migration to the cloud is a motivation for a lot of virtualization efforts, yes. But there's other virtualization efforts that are going on independent of an ultimate cloud capability. Brian talked a lot about virtualization first from a data center perspective and virtualizing servers and then the storage associated with those servers. I think we're seeing virtualization first kind of concepts manifest in other ways from other agencies as well. You got USDA that, not what, 2-3 years ago, established a policy that application development would comprehend a thin client kind of approach first. And then if that could not be accomplished, we would look at alternatives. You see that manifest in other agencies like Department of Energy, where it goes back 5 years. They wanted to get all spinning disk out of the work environment for security purposes. That's a virtualization concept. Let's virtualize the workload. You got similar initiatives today from the Navy and the Army around how do I implement a hosted work environment. We've gotten very used with Microsoft in a Windows environment to a robust work environment. Migrating that stuff to a thin client requires that I maintain that same robustness, that same user experience. So how do we virtualize that work environment? And those are a lot of the things that we're working on right now with our customers.
So what you're saying here is we have to blame Kurt for forcing us into virtualization. That's what you're saying?
He's creating the opportunity. He's the enabler here.
Well, thank you, Kurt. Yeah. Sean, you really wanted to say something about virtualization.
Well, where we are with virtualization and cloud has actually driven us to what I'm going to say our executive director calls mobile first, which in essence is any technology that we deploy when you look at how we reach out to our customers and inbound, how we deal with accessing services, is figure out how we do it first from a mobile standpoint and then make that available via our web services and other, right? And then what that does is that kind of bleeds over into all types of virtualization technology, business intelligence technology, and what have you. So it is, it's just interesting how we're beginning to move forward, and the way we describe virtualization in cloud, I think it's going to change into talking about outcomes, and there's an expectation that all of this is just going to be there, right?
When you talk mobile, it also brings me to telework, so let me, Kurt, talk a little bit about that strategy.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think both Tom and Sean highlighted the fact that as our customers, you know, really look at what is my development environment that addressed virtualization from an underlying perspective and take advantage of these new devices and mobility, they have to factor in, am I writing to the hypervisor level? No. They really are looking at, okay, how do I address from an HTML perspective? You know, how do I take advantage of the compute capability of that particular device? And you know, virtualization is an enabler, but it is a factor in, you know, the underpinnings of what you're delivering to the customer. But thinking through, you know, is my virtualization technology going to give me the flexibility that I can, you know, write a solution and then deploy it across the multitude of platforms? And, you know, our work with Citrix certainly allows that, you know, both from a tablet perspective, a mobile device perspective. And I think, again, back to a discussion we've been having all along, whether it's telework, whether it's data as a service, whether it's, you know, web access, customers are thinking about this very, you know, holistically and all up. And I think, you know, we're finding that virtualization is a key piece. It's an integral part of the operating system that they get for the Windows Server. And they're just building that in to really deliver the solutions they need to deliver. And I think that's one of the other big things that this administration has done a great job on, is that they focused on the citizen and they focused on the application. It's an application democracy. It's an application economy. And I think, you know, delivering capabilities, whether it's Recovery Gov, whether it's Census, whether it's, you know, self-service from the Postal Service, you can do that in a multitude of ways. And that underpinning that is virtualization.
When we talk mobile, we talk telework. Brian, I got to jump over to you. I mean, you guys during the census, during the decennial counts, you have the largest mobile workforce probably in the country, if not the world. How is virtualization playing a role into your view of telework, of mobile computing?
So we, like all federal agencies, have motivation to move towards supporting the telework policy. And we just recently completed a pilot of several of the major virtual desktop initiative providers in the space within our own organization and requirements. And we have a strategy that's pushing us towards what we call any device, anywhere. and moving beyond the bounds and constraints of the fat PC in the office, and positioning our workforce to work from wherever, whenever. And we think virtualization, desktop virtualization, if we will, is really a big piece of that. We want to remain device independent. We have some great lessons learned that we as an organization have benefited from on writing very specific applications for very specific customized devices. And now that that mobile tablet market has really matured, we think there's great opportunities to benefit our organization and give our staff mobility, give the organization the agility and mobility. So if there's a, you know, another snowmageddon, that we would have the opportunity for our staff to work remotely and leverage an existing infrastructure.
And I know as you guys get closer to the 2020 count, that's another mobile workforce is going to play another key piece to that strategy as well.
Clearly, mobile workforce is a big piece of the decennial census, and frankly, the other censuses and surveys that we conduct throughout the year. We don't only conduct work every 10 years. We have a number of other, actually hundreds of censuses and surveys that we conduct. We see mobile being really a big piece of that, and it's going to be exciting. You know, we think that as we move forward towards the 2020 decennial census, does the government have to be in the business of issuing the device that field representatives will use to collect responses? We also think that, and we're seeing this already with some of our existing surveys that we have available on the internet, that a significant portion of the American public are using mobile devices to respond to our surveys today. So moving away from the traditional bounds of the office and using their iPad or their Android device to actually respond. So we think that's a really fascinating area.
John, one of the things you're shaking your head at about the mobile workforce, mobile issue, imagine the people, your customers, the inspector generals that you support, do a lot of work outside the office. Are you guys working the virtualization part into their to help them be more mobile?
Well, you know, you talked earlier about where we see ourselves going in the future, and that is definitely our big focus between that and app virtualization. We have quite a few, the majority of our workforce is mobile between our auditors and our investigators, and we're looking to provide virtual sandboxes for these folks so they can go out and they can plug in into any device and they can have that secure environment that they can connect anytime, anywhere, from any, you know, from any location around the country. They can connect into the network and they can do the work that they need to do.
One of the things you brought up was this virtual sandbox, connect, get your data. But Brian, one of the things you mentioned was one of the struggles that you guys are having is that database side. Is that talk a little bit about why is that a difficulty?
We're finding that most of the major players in the database arena are not always positioned to support or endorse virtualizing databases. So we're not seeing that cost realization and that agility. So we're continuing to work with the large vendors in the industry to see if there aren't ways to, beyond their stovepipe solution, if there isn't kind of an industry-based standards approach to virtualizing those databases. Obviously, performance is an issue and a concern, but you know, we still think that there's opportunities to virtualize those databases, and it just requires kind of the vendor community, I think, coming together.
So let me throw it over to our vendor community. Tom, Kurt, who wants to jump in? Kurt?
Sure, I'll jump in. I think, you know, what we see from a Microsoft perspective, you know, we have a goal to provide virtualization and to be best in class for the Microsoft workloads, and that includes SQL Server. And I think what we'll find as we continue to evolve is that, as we've discussed earlier, it is a stepping stone to the cloud because we actually have a SQL data as a service called SQL Azure that's in the cloud today. So we provide cloud database capabilities that we do expect line of business applications to migrate to. We've got great solutions that are out there today in public sector from a 3-1-1 perspective. And we see this in a hybrid environment, the ability for our customers to use our SQL database virtualized within their environment, but also connect to the public cloud to pull together and mash up great applications and deliver them across a multitude of devices. And so, you know, it is something that's happening today and will continue to, you know, drive forward in the capabilities we bring forward.
Tom, did you want to jump in?
I was just going to say, to add to that, the ability that virtualization brings to the table to separate the application front end from the calculations that the database does and then the storage on the back end, we can put those in different places in the cloud infrastructure and give you lots of options.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left, so I want to go around the table and get what we call the getaway question. Give me a sense of where you're going to be in the next 3 to 5 years when it comes to virtualization, and what advice do you have for your colleagues in the government? So let's start with Sean.
Well, first off, there's an expectation that those capabilities are going to be there. Now, when you look at what virtualization and cloud provides, I actually think we're moving forward now, right? We always feel you have to lean forward, and it's more about increased capabilities, increased services, right? And again, from our perspective, you have to think increased fraud, waste, and abuse abilities, because we're counting on compute server capabilities to really grind and have real outcomes.
John?
Next 3 to 5 years for us will be doing the mobile virtualization and also moving towards the cloud. We will be in the cloud by that time. Some of our components will be local that require physical presence in our environment, but most of our stuff will be in the cloud.
And Brian?
I see us in 3 to 5 years having 70 to 80% of our compute resources virtualized. I see us having a desktop environment that is completely virtualized and allows us to provide those services anywhere, any place, anywhere.
And Tom?
I would say that from a consumer of information technology, I would expect to be able to log into my work environment from any device anywhere. And as a manager of IT resources, the ability to have tools in place to know who's accessing what and when.
And finally, Kurt.
From a Microsoft perspective, I mean, we're really looking at bringing the best-in-class, fastest-growing virtualization platform forward and allowing customers to take advantage of the multitude of devices they have in their environment and use it as a stepping stone to the cloud the way they need it. And I think this is an opportunity for driving greater efficiencies, and we're going to see that across the board, leveraging the great examples that we heard today from the customers here.
All right, on that note, we're going to say thank you very much. You've been listening to Virtualization, What Federal Managers Need to Know, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I was your host, Jason Miller, and I'd like to thank our guests, Sean Kingsbury, the CIO of the Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board, John Strait, the Acting Director of IT Services at the U.S. Postal Service's Office of Inspector General, Brian McGrath, the Chief Information Officer at the Census Bureau, Kurt Colson, the Vice President of Microsoft's U.S. Public Sector, and Tom Simmons, Vice President of U.S. Public Sector for Citrix.
Thank you for listening to the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.